We're holding on Nun Dalet Amud Beis by the Mishnah. Continuing with the listing of korbanos and the basic dinim of them, the Mishnah says Zivchei Shamei Tzibur, the korbanos of the shlomim of the tzibur. Now, normally a shlomim is a private korban, but then you have once a year on Shavuos you have the Shtei Alechem, and together with the Shtei Alechem there are a number of different korbanos brought, and among them are two sheep that are brought as zivchei shlomim. So even though this is a public korban, like all the korbanos of Yom Tov, this one is a shlomim and it's brought for the tzibur. They are considered so as zivchei shlomim tzibur ba'ashamos, as well as the korban asham. And the Mishnah interjects eluhein ashamos. What do we mean? What is the list of the ashamos that are relevant as far as this? Asham zelos, the osham that a person brings if he stole and then swore falsely on it and then does tshuva and admits. It's described near the end of Parshas Vayikra. It was actually just recently in Shlosha Parakim of Rambam as well. Asham Me'ilos, the Asham that a person brings when he committed Me'ilo, when he used something of Hektish for his own personal use. Later this year or next year, Be'ez Hashem, as the case may be, we'll learn Masechta Me'ilo, which has all the detailed dinim of that. The third one is Asham Shivcha Charufa, the Asham that a person brings if he had relations with a Shivcha Charufa. Rashi over here defines as a Shivcha Charufa is a Shivcha Knanis who is Miu'edes, who is reserved for an Eved Ivri, because as we know from Parshas Mishpatim, the master of an Eved Ivri is able to give him a Shivcha Knanis to consort with her and have children. You actually have the Gemara in Chrysus, which also we'll learn next year, Be'ez Hashem, goes into the details about it. There's actually different opinions about the exact definition of Shifcha Harufa. The halacha is actually like Rabbi Akiva's definition, that it's not just that she's miu'edis to an Eved Ivri, she's actually half Shifcha and half free. She had, for example, two masters, and one of them freed her, so now she's half Shifcha and half free, and now she's miu'edis to an Eved Ivri, because he's the only one who'd be able to marry her in that condition. If she's a full Shifcha, she could equally be well married to an Eved Knani. If she's a full freed woman, then she's considered a regular Jewish woman, like any Gioris, and she can marry a regular Jewish man, anybody except for a Kohen. So therefore, we're talking about where she's in this in-between situation, and the only one who could be with her is an Eved Ivri, and she is. She's Mekudeshes to him, and then somebody else goes and has relations with her. That's a Sham Shifcha Charufa. So again, the Torah describes that when the person is ready to do tshuva for it, and there it doesn't matter if it was B'shoy, that's one of the rare cases where a person brings a korban even for a mazid, then he brings this korban asham. The next one is
One question.
Yeah.
If a mamzer marries a shifcha harufa, the children not mamzerim, or they are mamzerim?
The children will be mamzerim. Well, so actually it's a good question, because if a mamzer marries a full shifcha, the children are avodim because they inherit her status, and then he can free them, and then they become regular Jews. The Mishnah in Kiddushin, in fact, mentions that that is a way. It's a different opinions in the Mishnah over there, but the halacha is like that opinion, that yes, yecholim mamzerim lehitar, he's able to make his children tahor in that way. If she's half shifcha and half bas chorin, and I'm not sure about that, because first of all, mamzer is not allowed to marry a bas chorin. Well, no, actually, I take that back. As a shifcha mosheferes, I think he'd be able to marry. I'm not sure. Is he able to marry a shifcha mosheferes? Yeah, I think he is. But anyway, the point, I'm not sure what would happen to the children then, because half of their status would be inherited from her, and they'd be a shifcha, but the other half would be inherited from him. They might well be still considered mamzerim. I'm actually not sure what would happen in that point. That's an interesting question. I'd have to look it up. But yeah, if she's a full shifcha, then the children are full avodim, and then he can free them. If she's a half shifcha, I'm not sure.
But you cannot be a half mamzer. Either you're a full mamzer or you're not a mamzer.
Well, that's true. So what would be the status of these children? I'm not sure. It's a good question. I'll have to remember to look it up. Okay. The next one is Asham Nozir, the Asham that a Nozir brings when he became Tomei. So he brings three Karbonis and cuts his hair and restarts his Nazirus. One of his three Karbonis is an Asham. The fifth one is Asham Metzora, the Asham that a Metzora brings when he completes his Tzoras. He brings three Karbonis. If he can afford it, he brings three animals, one for a Chatas, one for an Ola, and one for an Asham. If he's poor and he can't afford that, he brings two birds for the Chatas and the Ola, and he brings either way, he has to bring a sheep for an Asham. And the sixth one is Asham Tolery. The sixth one is an Oshem Tolui, which is where a person is not sure whether he did something that he's Chayav Kares. This is, again, in Masechta Prisus, it talks about the details about it, and there's different opinions about it among the Tanoim. The halacha is to bring an Oshem Tolui, it would have to be where there were two things in front of him, one of which is Osir and one is Mutter, and he ate or did one of them, and he's not sure whether it was the one that was Osir because the other one, let's say, had disappeared or was not available or whatever. Classic example is there were two pieces of Chaylev in front of him. Two pieces of fat. One's Chaylev, one's shuman, which is permissible fat. He ate one of them. He ate one of them. The other one got lost. Now he doesn't know whether the one he ate was the chalev. So he brings an Oshem Tolui, and that protects him from punishment by Hashem. If he ever finds out that the one he actually ate was the chalev, then he will bring a chathas for that as well. Anyway, that's an Oshem Tolui. So all six of those are, when we say an Oshem, and we're going to describe the din of the Zivchei Shalmei Tzibur, and of the Ashamos, those are the six types of Oshem. Rashi points out there was a girsa in manuscripts that he had available to him that said Oshem Vadai. Rashi says, no, Oshem Vadai is not a separate type of Oshem. The first five on this list are Oshem Vadai because the person is bringing them for something definite. The sixth one is Oshem Tolui, is a specific category of its own. There's no reason to mention Oshem Vadai separately because that's just a general name for the first five. Anyway, so all of these korbanos, the Mishnah continues, shechitas and batzofim, all of them are shechted in the northern half of the Azara, because they're kodshei kodshim, and as we've been learning throughout the perek, those have to be shechted in the northern half of the Azara. We learned earlier in the Masechta, a three-way machlokas, how much of the northern half is actually considered sofim for this purpose, only the area directly north of the Mizbeach, also the area northwest of that, closer to the Heichel, also the area northeast of that, closer to Shaar Nikano, whatever. We discussed that earlier in the Masechta. So all of them have to be shechted in that sofen. The kibul dom and the kli sharis that sofen. All of them, the blood has to be received in a kli sharis in the north. So we said at the beginning of the parak actually that the oshem of a mitzora is a partial exception to that, because we said there the kabbalah sadam is actually done in two different stages. You have one kohen receives the blood in a basin as usual, but then we said another kohen receives some of the blood into his hand, and that's when he goes and applies it to the mitzora's ear, thumb, and toe. We learned at the beginning of the parak. That is why, when the Mishnah started off at the beginning of our parak, Kodshei Kodshim Shritosim Batsofoin, it didn't say the Kibul Domen Bachlicharis Batsofoin, because you have this exception of the Asham Metzora. Here we're listing the Asham, here we're listing out the individual Ashamos, then we can say that the fact is the Kibul Domen is done in a Kli Sharis in the north, because most of the blood is in fact received in a Kli Sharis. You just have that partial amount that's received in the Kohen's hand. So like all the other Kodshei Kodshim, it'll also be done in the north. The Dam and Tone, Shtei Matanos Shein Arba, the blood of it is applied, Shtei Matanos Shein Arba, which, as we learned before, means that the Kohen goes to the two opposite corners of the Mizbeach and then dashes it against the wall over there. We had the Machlokas Rav and Shmuel previously. Does it mean that he does, Rav had said he does one application on one wall and then next to it on the adjacent wall by that corner, so that you have at the end over there are two areas of blood, but they were actually done by separate splashes. And according to Shmuel, we're talking about one splash against the corner, which goes on the two sides. So you do that by these korbanos. Most korbanos, as we've said so far, are like that. The only exception so far that we had was the chatois. You have the chatois at Pnimius, where the blood is done in the heichol, and the chatois at Chitzonius, where it's done individually on the four corners of the Mizbeach. Most other korbanos, we already said the oilos, and now we have these as well. It's Shtei Matanos Shein Arba. As far as the meat of them, it can be eaten within the kloyim, which means within the curtains of the Azara. That was in the Mishkan, they had curtains, in the Bismikash, they had walls. L'zichrei kohona, they have to be specifically eaten by the male kohenim. L'yoyim v'layla, b'chol machal, they can eat them however they want, prepared in any way they want, meaning that they don't dafka have to roast it like the Korban Pesach. If they don't have a preference, the Gemara says elsewhere, they should eat it roasted and together with mustard, because that's the way that kings eat meat, and they should eat l'moshcha, the Pesach says they should eat the matnas kohona, are supposed to be l'moshcha, for greatness, which means, in other words, that they should eat it in a way that great people, that kings do. And in those times, that was the way that kings would eat their meat as a delicacy like that. But if they have a preference, if they'd rather eat it cooked, if they'd rather eat it boiled, if they'd rather whatever, then they can do that. Another meaning of b'chol machol, actually, that some of the mafarshim point out, means that they can also eat it together with other food. Now, you have a concept called chulin ba'azara. You're not allowed to bring chulin food into the azara. The only thing you're allowed to have in there is kodshim. But nevertheless, when they have to eat these korbanos within the azara, they are allowed to bring along chulin food to mix together with them. It's going to have to say all be within the deadline, but they're able to do that. They're able to mix it with other food to make it taste better. So actually a chiddush that's pointed out in that is you shouldn't think. I mean, after all, they're supposed to be eating it l'shem shamayim. They're supposed to be eating it. Their eating is actually the final stage of kapara for the owner. Primarily, the kapara is accomplished by sprinkling the blood, but to a certain degree, also the kapara is also accomplished to a certain extent by them eating the korban. So you would think that maybe they have to eat it purely l'shem shamayim. And then nevertheless, the point is that the Kesef Mishnah explains on the Rambam that we have to be told that no, they can eat it however they want. They can eat it however they want, and they can mix it with other food, and they can prepare it however they want, etc. Okay, so they can eat it l'yom v'layla. They can eat it for one day, meaning the day the korban was brought, v'layla, and the following night ad chatzos they can eat it until chatzos. As the first Mishnah of Brachas tells us, the reason why they can eat it only chatzos is a takana of the chachamim kedei laharfik min ha'aveira. We learned that already by the chatzos that they can eat them until chatzos. Tosfos actually points out at the end of the peret that. Aloysa Shachar is not necessarily so noticeable. The sky starts brightening at Aloysa Shachar, but it's not always so noticeable compared to what was before. So therefore, the Chachamim were concerned, it's not really a clearly defined time, and it's not like they had clocks and watches, you know. So therefore, the Chachamim saw fit to make a Zera from Chatzos onward. When it comes to the Korbanos, we're going to talk about in the next Mishnah about the on Nun Hei Amud Aleph about the Shlomim that they can be eaten L'shnei Yom V'Laila Echad. They can be eaten for 2 days and the night in between, meaning they can be eaten until Shia. The Chacham didn't have to make any Zera because Shia is fairly clearly noticeable. You can tell when the sun has gone below the horizon. So therefore, there's no reason to make a Harkoka for that. So there is a Tosfos elsewhere that talks about that the Chachamim are saying you should eat it only until Chatzos, but that's only the Chatzchila. If you didn't finish it by Chatzos, the Chachamim are not necessarily going to say, well, stop eating it and let it become Noiser, because after all, you're not supposed to leave over Noiser. So according to that, when we're saying Ab Chatzos, it would be only the Chatzchila. B'di'evet, they could eat it afterwards as well. That's Tosfos said that elsewhere. So the Gemara starts off. Menolon de Boyd Sofren. How do we know that these korbanos that we're talking about over here, the Zivchei Shamit Zibur and the Ashomos, have to be chef from the north? The question is really particularly about the Zivchei Shamit Zibur, because the Osham we learned earlier in the parak, because the pasuk says that the pasuk compares an Osham to a Chatos. So to that extent we said that there's a comparison between the Osham and the Ola separately, because we said you can't learn from a Hekish to another Hekish. So we're not really asking so much about the Osham. The question is more about the Zivchei Shamit Zibur. How do we know they have to be shechted in the north? First, this refers to something that they explained earlier in the Perek on that subject. Why don't we just say it? Binyan Av. Why don't we just say, once we find that there are Kodshe Kodshim that have to be shechted in the north, and in particular the Oila, why don't we say everything from that? But the Zivchei Shamit Zibur, the Tosfos had pointed out over there, because you can't learn it from certain other korbanos, because it's todir. Because you could say that the Zivchei Shabbat Zibur are brought on a scheduled time once a year on Shavuos, as opposed to, let's say, a Chatos is not a scheduled thing. And then, for that, you could say Faker, an Oilo is more todir because it's brought every day. That would be the point. And Oilo is brought every day. These Zivchei Shamit Zibur are once a year. And also the fact that you have other kinds of shlomim, which we're going to learn further down on this Amud, are not Kodshe Kodshim. They're Kodshim Kalim, and they can be shechted anywhere in the Azara. You could argue that maybe shlomim is shlomim, and maybe there shouldn't be a reason why they can't be shechted anywhere. So we need a pasuk to show us that they have to be shechted in the north. So the Gemara says, the Tony Rabba Barav Chonon Kamei Rava. The answer is Rabba Barav Chonon taught a brisa in front of Rava that says as follows. When the Pasuk says about the Korbanos of Shavuos, now again, you have the Shtei Alechem, you have these Shalmei Tzibur, and then you have several other Korbanos that are brought together with the Shtei Alechem. One of them is you also bring, the Pasuk says, V'asisim Si'ir Izen Echad L'chatas. You should bring one goat as a chatas. And then the pasuk continues that you bring the two sheep as a shlamim. This is, by the way, why in Shavuos davening, usually in Yom Tov davening, when we list the korbanos, and afterwards we say the paragraph from Minchasim and Eskeim Kimedubar, we usually say, the soyer lechaper, and one goat to be mechaper. But on Shavuos, we say, shnei se'irim lechaper, because you have two. There's one that's part of the regular musafim, and then you have another goat for a chatas that's brought together with the shtei alechem. Anyway, so the pasuk says the seer is an echad l'chatos, and then it continues in the same pasuk by mentioning the sheep for the zevach shlamim, which therefore we learn a hekish. Ma chatos v'tzofen, just like a chatos has to be shechted in the north, as we've learned earlier, af shamei tzibur v'tzofen. The same way these shamei tzibur also have to be shechted in the north. However, Amalei Rava, but Rava says, how can you learn like that? V'chi chatas mehecham lamda. After all, the chatas itself, where did we learn it had to be shechted in the north? Me oila, we learned it from the oila, because the pasuk said, where the oila is shechted is where the chatas is shechted. So that's a hekish. It's considered, earlier in the parak, we called that kind of thing a hekish. You would think a hekish is only when two things are just said one to the other, but here, But here, we learned earlier that it only says it actually by one kind of korban, only when an individual brings a korban. By the other chatois, it did not say the words that you shechted where the oila is shechted. We just learned it from the fact, we just learned it from extra words in the pasuk, the shachat oisa, and then the word hachatos is extra, and we learned from that. So therefore, it is considered a hekish, and so we learned the chatos from an oila by a hekish. Gavra alama behekish, choizer malama behekish. Since when can you learn something with a hekish from something else, and then learn a third thing from that with a hekish? We learned earlier in the parak that you can't, with kodshim, you can't do that. So you can't say because the oila it says that you shecht in the north, and the chatas we learn from that by a hekish, and then you're going to learn from the chatas to the shalmei tzibur also by a hekish. That doesn't work. So Ella miditoni Rav Mori Brei de Rav Kahana. Rather, says Rava, you have to learn it from what Rav Mori said. Rav Mori, the son of Rav Kahana, said as follows. A different pasuk says they're talking about the chatzotzis, talking about the trumpets that they blow when the korbanos are being brought. The pasuk says al oles seichem ba'al zivchei shalmeichem. You should blow the trumpets by your oles when you're bringing your korbanos ola and when you're bringing your zivchei shalmeichem. So we learn from that, ma oila kodesh kodshe kodoshim, just like an oila is kodshe kodshim, which, with all that means, it means besides that it has to be shechted in the north, it also means, it actually points out, as we learned earlier, it means that if a tzvul yom touches it, it'll become tomei, if it's taken out of the azara, it'll become posel, etc. Af zivche shamei tzibur, kodshe kodshim, the same way, the zivche shamei tzibur, a kodshe kodshim. So in other words, when it says in the pasuk alo yaseichem al zivchei shalmeichem, we don't mean just any old shlamim. We mean specifically the shlamim that are a different category, namely the ones that are the shalmei tzibur. So therefore, we learn from that. Ma oila batzofen af zivchei shalmei tzibur batzofen. Just like the oila is shechted in the north, the same way the zivchei shalmei tzibur are shechted in the north. Tosfos wonders that in that case still how would that tell us it's ma'akiv. At one point Tosfos says, we learned earlier, the Gemara had discussed earlier in the whole sugya of lomid min alomid, we had when it comes to learning something with a kavachoyma and then learning from that to something else with a hekish, we had Rav Papa saying that such a thing is allowed, so we could do that way. We could say that we make a kavachoyma from chatos and then in turn we would do a hekish from that. So it could work at least according to that opinion. How it would work according to the other opinion of Abba Ba'ava, who said of it, how would it work according to the other opinion, Mazutra rather, who disagrees with that, choice just leaves the question open. Okay. So that's how we know that the Zivchei Shalmei Tzibur have to be shechted in the north by the comparison, by a direct hekesh with Ola. Okay, so the Gemara says, Ela hekesha tamal amai osa. Fine, then what is the first hekesh? After all, we do have the hekesh between the goat for the chatas and the Zivchei Shalmei Tzibur. So if we're not learning from that, if we're not learning from that, to say that the Zivchei Shamed Tzibur are shechted in the north, but then again, that would be a hekesh on top of a hekesh, and we can't do that, then what's the point of that hekesh in the first place? What are we doing? What are we doing with that hekesh? So that's the question. What is that first hekesh coming to teach us if it's not coming to teach us that? And the answer is, it teaches us that it's like a chatas. Ma chatas ein achelas elu zichet v'hona. Just like a chatas can be eaten only by the male koyanim. And there we can't be learning from an oila, because an oila is not eaten at all. The same way the zivchei shamed tzibur. How would we know that they're eaten only by the male koyanim? That's what that hekesh is teaching us. Tosfos points out, you can't say that it means that it would teach us, that the hekesh would teach us that the blood is to be applied individually to the four corners in the zeach, like it is by the chatas, because since it's compared to an oila, it's also compared to an oila, so there's no reason to think that the blood application should be any different than an oila. So therefore, the only comparison to a chatas would have to be as far as how it's eaten, whereby an oila, that's not relevant because an oila is not eaten. So the Gemara says, Omalei Abaya. But Abaya asks Rava, Ihochi, if you're going to say like that, that you're saying that hekesh teaches us that it's eaten only by the male koyanim, Gabe El Nozer. What about consider what it says by the ram of the Nozer? Again, a Nozer brings a bunch of korbanos. One of them is when he finishes his Nazir successfully, he brings one of the korbanos that he brings is a ram as a shlomim. And we're going to learn in the next Mishnah that it mostly has the din of a shlomim, except that it's eaten for only one day and one night. And dichtiv, the pasuk says v'hikri v'es korban el Hashem. He brings his korban to Hashem. Keves ben shnasei tomim echad la'oila. One lamb within its first year that's perfect, that's unblemished as an oila. V'chav sa'achas bas shnasei tomim lachatas. And one female sheep also within its first year that's unblemished as a chatas. V'ayil echad tomim l'shlomim. And one unblemished ram as a shlomim. So there you have the order is oila chatas shlomim. Hachinami di neimadi kisha. Are you going to say there that also the Torah is making a hekesh between the El Nozir and the Chatas, and say Machatas en enatzelos elo zichet kohona af El Nozir nami en enatzelos elo zichet kohona? You're going to say that a Chatas and the El Nozir are both eaten only by the male koyanim, and it's not so. The Chatas is eaten by the male koyanim, but the El Nozir is not. It's for most purposes it's considered like a shlomim, and everybody can eat it. So you see that just because a korban is placed next to a chatas, doesn't mean that it has the same dinim as a chatas. Why should we say that? The zivchei shamed tzibur, then it means that it does, and that therefore the korban can be eaten only by zivchei kohona. So Rava answers him, Hochi hashta. How do you think to compare? It's different. When it comes to the ram of the nazir, the shlomim, the pasuk specifically says that the kohen should take the cooked foreleg of the ram, and that's because that's one of the parts that's given to the kohen. So the klal the kulei by the machli, right? So that implies that that implies the rest of the animal can be eaten by the owner, because otherwise, why single out that particular part that is given to the kohen? So that alone shows the rest of it is eaten by the owner. Okay, the Gemara asks, Zroya b'sheila mi'ol l'sachet alo zichet kohona. Fine, but at least then that Zroya b'sheila, by that logic, should be able to be eaten only by the koyanim. Because fine, you're going to say the rest of the animal is clearly not meant to be eaten only by the koyanim, because the pasuk says you give only that part to the koyanim. But at least we should say that hekesh should teach us that only that part can only be eaten by the male kohona, by the male koyanim. And the fact is it's not, because the next Mishnah says, Hamuram mehem, was taken off from the El Nozir, Kayotze behem, has exactly the same dinim as the El Nozir, except that it can be eaten by the koyanim and their families. So we see their wives and their sons and their daughters. So therefore, if you're saying that you have a hekesh with the chatas, then you should say that part at least can be eaten only by the male koyanim. So it must be kasha. You're right, that's a kasha. We would have to understand, tackle why indeed we don't use the hekesh for that purpose. The boyisema, or another answer, you could say, you know why the ram of the nazir, and here this will answer even about that cooked foreleg, why it doesn't belong only to the male koyanim, because kodshe ikri, the posit calls that part of the ram that's given to the koyanim, it calls it kodesh. The posit says kodesh hu lakoyim. But it only calls it kodesh. It doesn't call it kodshe kodshim la'ikri. It doesn't call it kodshe kodshim. So therefore, by So therefore, the Torah is specifically excluding, in other words, don't think to treat it like kodesh kodeshim, which can be eaten only by male kohenim, rather treat it like regular kodesh, which means that anyone in the kohen's family can eat it. Rashi points out by the Zivchei Shamu Tzibur, it also says kodesh yu lakohen, but there, and it doesn't say kodesh kodeshim either, but there, because it says lashem. So therefore, it doesn't mean to exclude it from the Hekesh. It means by saying Kodesh Lashem, Kodesh Yu Lashem, Lakoyen, is in effect the same as saying Kodesh Kodoshim. Whereas by the Eil Nazir, it does not use that word. It says Kodesh Hu Lakoyen. It says it's holy for the Koyen. So therefore, that's a basis for saying that's not Kodshe Kodshim. It's only Kodshim Kalim, and Kodshim Kalim can be eaten by anybody in the Koyen's family, not just by the male Koyen. So that's how we can work out that the Zivchei Shamu Tzibur are eaten only by the male Kohenim, and that's what we're using the Hekesh between Nen and Achatas for. Okay, so the Gemara says, Ve'elo mai huchse itkash. Okay, well, according to that second answer then you're telling me we're not actually learning that the ram of the Nazir is restricted to male Kohenim at all. So in that case, what is the point of the Hekesh between it and Achatas? According to either answer, actually. Whichever answer we're using, we're saying that the Pasuk is not implying that the El Nazir is comparable to the Achatas. Well, then why does the Torah mention it next to the Achatas? And the answer is, it means that if the Nazir were to bring only one of these three korbanos and then shave his hair, then he's yotze. He didn't bring the other korbanos yet. Nevertheless, he's still yotze, and now he has to bring his other korbanos later on. But as long as the korban was kosher, then he's good, and then he's able to now continue. Now he's able to drink wine and do all the other things he was also to do as a Nazir. So that we learn from the So now, we learn like this. It actually explains the limud as follows. The El Nazir, if he brings it by itself, then he's Yotze, because the Pasuk says, after it lists the Korbanos, it says, after it describes how he does the Korbanos, the Achar, and afterwards, Yishva Nazir Yayin, the Nazir can drink wine. Now, the Sifri explains on that Pasuk that when it says, why does it have to say the Achar? Obviously, at that point, is afterwards. It means after even one of these things, namely the Shlomim, because the main thing is the Shlomim. When the Nazir brings his Korbanos, what he does is he takes the hair that he shaved off, and he puts it into the fire where he's cooking the shlomim, and then afterwards he takes the cooked foreleg and gives it to the kohen. So the shlomim is sort of the main thing; it's the centerpiece of his korbanos. And so we're saying that as long as he does that korban, then he's yotze. Rashi also goes on to bring from the Sifri when the pasuk says that the nazir cuts his hair pesach oyel moed in front of the door of the oyel moed. It doesn't literally mean in front of the oyel moed. That would be disrespectful to go shave his hair there. It means that he shaves his hair in connection with a korban about which it says pesach oyel moed, namely the shlomim. We're going to start talking about at the bottom of this amud that by the shlomim the Torah specifically says that it's to be shechted pesach oyel moed. So therefore, we learn that the Nazir's hair is to be cut in connection with a shlomim, which is called Pesach Oyel Moed. So now we're saying, but because, and the Pasuk says, Va'achar, and after that, he's brought only a shlomim, he can drink wine. So now the Hekesh with the Chatas teaches us that if he also only brought the Chatas, or if he also only brought the Oyla, then that would also be fine, as long as the Korban was kosher, even though he did not yet bring the other two. Nevertheless, at this point, his Nazirus is over, and he can drink wine. So that's what we learned from the Hekesh between the El Nazir and the Chatas. Not who can eat it, but rather the fact that any one of these three Korbanos is enough for his Nazirus to be over. In this whole discussion over here, when the Gemara had let's look back at the flow of the Gemara. We had Rabbi Bar Rav Chanan saying that we have a Hekesh between the Chatas and the Zivchei Shlomim, teaching us that there has to be in the Tzofen, and Rava argues that Dovra Alamed Behekesh, Chozom Alamed Behekesh, and Rava had said that no, we have a different Hekesh between an Ola and Zivchei Shamu Tzibur. And then the Gemara had asked, well, then what's the first Hekesh teaching us? And we went through this whole discussion. So there's a point, actually. There's one of the Mephoshim, Har Tzvi, from a Tzvi Pesach Frank, the Rav of Yerushalayim, about 80 years ago. He goes through and explains some details in the Sugya. He says Rabbi Bar Rav Chanan had learned the Braisa, but he had the whole, when the Gemara had quoted the Braisa, the, he had quoted, what he was quoting was not the Braisa alone. He was quoting the Braisa as well as his own understanding of it together. The Braisa had just said that there's a hekesh between the Zivche Shamu Tzibur and the Chafas. The fact that we learned that Tzofen was Rabbi Baruch Hanan's own inference from that. So now, Rava asks him, is not on the Braisa, he's asking on you, Rabbi Baruch Hanan, how could you understand that way? And then he goes on to explain more of the sugya in that vein. The Gemara had asked what are we doing with the hekesh? And the answer is that the question is now on the Braisa. Why is the and the question is not on the pasuk. The question is on the Braisa. Why did the Braisa? If we're not using the hekesh for suffering, and we can't because as Rava pointed out, we can't because that would be a dover alav behekesh chozer malamed behekesh, and we can't do that. So now the question is, well then, what is the Braisa using the hekesh for? And the answer is, therefore, that's the answer. So now the answer would be that we're learning from that hekesh that it can be eaten only by the male kohenim. And then becomes the question. Then comes the question. Well, what about the el nazir? Then what about the el nazir? And again, this all goes back to the point. The Braisa had only said that there's a hekesh between the chatas and the zivchei shamid tzibur. Rabbi Baruch Hanan had wanted to explain that it means that they have to be shechted in the north. But then Rava had slogged that up and explained that it meant as far as eating. So now becomes the question, well then why don't we say the same thing by the ale nazir? So according to him, that's the flow of the Gemara, is it all started with the fact that there was a braisa saying that there is a hekesh, but not specifying what that hekesh is for. And Rabbi Baruch Hanan understood that the hekesh is as far as suffering, and it turns out that not, and that drives the whole rest of the Gemara over here about what are we doing with that hekesh, and why we don't use a similar hekesh to say about the el nazir. Okay. So that's that then. So
why did the Gemara phrase it this way? It's confusing.
So, I mean, this is the Har Tzvi's explanation of the Gemara. The simple way we would explain the Gemara without him is that the Braisa itself had actually made the comparison. Machatas Tzofen, Avzivchei Shamet Tzibur Tzofen would be all part of the Braisa. It's the Hautzvi's Chiddush, that part is not part of the Braisa, but rather Rabbi Baruch Hanan's explanation of what the Braisa meant. But yeah, if you look at the Braisa, if you look at the Gemara in its straightforward form without that, then it means that was all the Braisa. And then the question was, how is the Braisa able to do that, violating the rule of Dovar Alam Behekesh, Chozer Malam Behekesh, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, we've established that the Zivchei Shamet Tzibur, in fact, have to be shechted in the Tzofen. And once we said they're shechted in the Tzofen, then we say it's like the other korbanos that are shechted in the Tzofen, where it's also the kibbul dam has to be in the Tzofen. Okay. Now we start turning. So far the five Mishnayos we've learned so far have been all about Kodshim Kodshim. Now we start going to Kodshim Kalim. And there's a number of differences between Kodshim Kalim, Kodshim Kalim. One of the major, now we're going to have differences as far as where and who can eat them and so forth, but another major difference, which is not addressed here in the Gemara, but Rashi mentions it, is as far as the Dinim of Me'ilah. When a person designates an animal as a korban, it now has, as long as it's suitable to be brought for a korban, it has kedusha saguf, it has intrinsic kedusha. Now the difference is though, if it's kodshe kodshim, then right away the dinim of me'ilah apply to it. So now, if a person were to use it for work, or if he were to shecht, well, he was shecht and he'd be chayav kares anyway, but whatever, fine. If he were to use it for work, or if he were to whatever, then he would be over on the issur of me'ilah. With kodshim kalim, it's not like that. Kodshim kalim, me'ilah applies only after the korban is shechted and the blood is sprinkled, then me'ilah applies to the emurim, to the parts that are going to be burnt on the mizbeach. The idea being, basically, with Kodshim Kodshim, the whole thing essentially belongs to the Mizbeach, except that Hashem grants the Kohenim to write the right to eat parts of it. It's called the Mishulchan Gavoya Kozochu, so to speak, they merit to eat from Hashem's table. But intrinsically, it all belongs to the Mizbeach. By an Ola, definitely, by an obviously does, and by a Chatas, Hashem, and by a Chatas, and by the other Kodshim Kodshim, Hashem grants it to the Kohenim to eat. When it comes to Kodshim Kalim, what we're saying is they're not, the korban as a whole does not, in a certain sense, belong to Hashem. Only once the imurim are separated out, those belong to Hashem. Those are to be offered on the mizbeach, and therefore me'ilah applies to those. So the Mishnah starts off a toida, a korban toida, the el nazir, and the ram that's brought by a nazir that we just discussed, which is one of the korbanos that the nazir brings when he finishes his nazirah successfully. Kodshim kalim, these are kodshim kalim, which, as we said, means that they're not subject to me'ilah until you get to the emorim. Shritasin b'chol mokam ba'azara. They can be shechted anywhere in the Azara. They do not have to be shechted in the north, as we're going to discuss. Now, we're not going to focus so much in the Gemara on this Mishnah. We're not going to focus so much on that. We're not going to focus on that part about being able to shecht it anywhere in the Azara. That the Gemara is going to do in connection with the next Mishnah, where it describes that the Shlomim could be shechted anywhere in the Azara. Why it does that, I don't know. It could be that originally these two Mishnayos maybe were joined together in the Gemara, and therefore the Gemara just discusses them back to back. I don't know. Whatever the case, they can be shechted anywhere in the Azara. We'll learn at the bottom of the Amud and on the following Amud why that is and where what the dinim are of where they can be shechted. The dam maton shtei matonas shein arba. The blood again is applied shtei matonas shein arba to the mizbeach, like we discussed before, going to the two opposite corners, the northeast and southwest corners, because as we learned previously, those are the two corners that have yisoid. If you were to go to the southeast corner, there's no yisoid there. As we learned, because it's in the territory of Yehuda. So the blood is done shtema trana shenaba. Benech kolim b'chol ha'ir. These can be eaten anywhere in the city of Yerushalayim. L'chol adam, they can be eaten by any person, meaning zorim. Not any person, the person can't be tameh or anything, but whatever. The point is it can be eaten by zorim. B'chol machol, again, prepared however they want. There's no particular specific din of how they have to prepare it. L'yoyim v'layla, again, like the other korbanos, they have one day, and the following night, ad chatzoris, until chatzoris, like we talked about before, because midrabanan, because we want to keep people from eating it past the deadline. As far as, by the way, the toida and the el nozer also have this in common. Both of them come with loaves of bread. The toida, we'll learn about it more extensively. Well, we'll learn about it in Arma Sefta. We'll learn about it more extensively in Menachas, Bez Hashem. The toida comes with 40 loaves of bread, and the el nozer comes with 20 loaves of bread. So they are also, that the Sefta says, that they're allowed to do when they eat the bread, they can do whatever they want with it. They can eat it however they want. They can even, for example, they can soak it in water. Let's say they can do whatever they want with it. The only one thing is actually that when it comes to menachas in general, they're not allowed to make them chametz. And when it comes to the bread that comes with the toida, 10 of the loaves are chametz. The other 30 that are matzah and the 20 that come with the nozer, actually, I'm not sure. I don't know. Actually, I'd have to look up whether they're able to make them chametz after the fact. When it comes to a regular mincha, the din is that they can't eat when the kohenim eat the rest of the regular mincha. They cannot make it chametz, but these are not a full fledged mincha, so maybe it's different. Anyway, so the Mishnah continues. They can eat them for a day and a night until Chatzos. Continues the Mishnah. Hamuram mehem, what was separated from them. In the case of the Toda, you have as follows. You have the chos of a shoik, the breast and the thigh of the animal that are taken off and given to the Kohen. And in addition, you also have, because in that sense, the toda is like a toda is basically a subspecies of shlomim, and a shlomim has the breast and thigh taken off, as we're going to talk about in the next Mishnah. In addition, with the toda, you have four types of bread, 10 loaves of each type, so you take one loaf of each type and give it to the kohen. So that's called hamura mehem. In the case of the nazir, you have, we talked about before, the cooked front right leg of the animal. Plus, you also have the chos of a shoik, because again, it's a shlomim. And then you also have one of each of the two types of bread. Is also all of those are waved and given to the kohen. So all of those, hamura mehem, kayotze behem, they have exactly the same dinim in terms of the deadline and in terms of where they can be eaten and how they can be eaten. Ella, the only exception is who can eat them. Shamuram, these parts that are taken off and given to the kohenim, nechal kohenim, can be eaten by the kohenim, or not by zorim, l'mishehem, but it can be eaten also by the kohenim's wife, v'libneim, v'lavdehem, and also by their children, and also by their slaves, their avodim knanim. They have the same status as the kohen, and therefore they're also able to. The Sfastemis actually says, wait a second, the children of kohenim, the sons of kohenim, are themselves kohenim, so why do you have to mention them separately? So he gives an answer because it's considered avoida. So therefore, you would think maybe if they're children, if they have little boys, they're not able to do the avoida yet. Maybe they can't eat it. But no, nevertheless, they're still allowed to. Another more balabatish answer is just that v'nehem doesn't mean dafka their sons; it means their daughters as well. So all of them, so the kohen and his family and everybody who's considered part of his family, which includes the avodim knanim, are able to eat the mura mehem. But then they still have the same rules as far as the deadline and as far as that they can eat it anywhere in Yerushalayim. Okay. So the Gemara says, how we know, now we're going to focus on how we know that these korbanos can be eaten anywhere in Yerushalayim. So the Gemara says, Tanan Rabbanan, we learn it in Braisa. Hashem says to Moshe, and Moshe in turn tells Aaron and company when it comes to the korbanos of the Milurim, he says, the breast that was waved and the thigh that was lifted off, this is from one of the korbanos that was brought for the Milurim, was a shlomim, was a ram that was brought as a shlomim, and again they took the chos of a shoik, and those are taken off and those are separated out from the rest of the korban. So Moshe tells them, Toichlu b'makom tahor. You should eat them in a place that is tahor. Now, Amar Rav Nechemya. So Rav Nechemya says, what does that mean? The previous shonim b'tumah achlum. What does that mean? And the previous thing, the earlier korbanos that he talked about, the chatois and the mincha, where he says you should eat them, were they eating them in a tahor place? Why over here is it stressing b'makom tahor as though until now they, as though the other things they were eating in a place that's tahor? Rather, says Rav Nechemya, what it means is, when it says Mokum Toher, now it doesn't say Mokum Kodesh, the Uriu Korbanos, the Chatas, and the Mincha, it says they have to eat them in Mokum Kodesh, in a holy place, which means inside the Azara. Here it doesn't say that, it just says Mokum Toher. That means Miklal Shu Tomei. That means that it's a place where a certain degree of tumma is allowed to be in that area. Not obviously the people who are eating it cannot be tummy, and they can't, people who are tummy can't touch it, but at least they're allowed to be in that area. So what does that mean? Tohar mitumas mitzora, betomei mitumas zol. What it means is, it has to be an area which is tohar insofar as a mitzora is not allowed to go in there, but it can be tomei in the sense that a zol is allowed to be there. Now, the Gemara in Pesachim discusses in detail, you have these different degrees, there's different types of tmeim, and there's different areas where they're allowed to be. A mitzora has to be outside of all three machnas. So you have like this. In the midbar, you have three machnas. There's machnas shchina, which is the Mishkan itself, the camp of the Shechina, the Mishkan itself. You had Machna Leviya, the area around it with the Leviyim camp, the three families of Leviyim, Gershon, Kosson, Merari on three sides, and Moshe and Aaron and his sons on the fourth side. That's called Machna Leviya. And then you had the rest of the camp of the Jewish people, it was called Machna Yisrael. When they built the Beis Mikdash, then the definitions became Machna Shechina is the Azara. Not the Ezra's Noshim, by the way. The Ezra's Noshim is something that was added that has a Kedusha Dirabonon. But the Midaraisa, we're talking about the Azara proper, the Ezra's Yisrael, Ezra's Koyanim, and the area of the Mizbeach, and the rest of that, is Machna Shechina. Then you have the rest of the Harabayas counts as Machna Leviya, and the rest of the city of Yerushalayim counts as Machna Yisrael. Mitzorayim have to be outside all three Machnas, so in the Midbar, they would have to be outside all three camps, and in Eretz Yisrael, they would have to be outside Yerushalayim, and for that matter, any walled city. Zovim and people of that category, Zovim, women who have given birth, Bali Keri, etc., are not allowed into Machna Leviya, but they're allowed to be in Machna Yisrael, so they'd be allowed to be in the camp of the rest of the Shevatim, and in Yerushalayim, they'd be allowed to be in the city of Yerushalayim. Tmei and Mess are allowed into Machna Leviya. Even the Gemara mentions elsewhere the Mess himself can be in Machna Leviya. We find that Moshe had Yosef's bones with him, and he was in Machna Leviya. So Tmei and Mess are allowed in Machna Leviya, which in future generations means the Harabayis. And then you have, and none of them are allowed into Machna Shechina. So now, Rav Nechemya is saying, the Pasuk, by saying Mokum Tohar, is implying a place that has one kind of Tara, but has a different kind of Tumah. So Tohar, Mitumas Mitzorda, Vitomim Mitumas Zov. It's Tohar in the sense that no Mitzorayim are allowed to be in the city of Yerushalayim, but it's Tomei in the sense that Zovim and people in the same category as a Zov can be there. The Ezer is there. What would that be, that place? Machnis, Zemachni Yisrael. That would be the camp of Yisrael, which means the camps of the 12 Shevatim in the Midbar and the city of Yerushalayim in later generations. So that is the area where you're allowed to eat the Korbanos. Rashi actually says an interesting line over here. Rashi says the verb, Machne Yisrael, but he says, Bamidbar, in the desert, called Degel, Basech Asifas Digloy. Every Degel, every banner, meaning every division of the Shvatim, within its division. Now, you had, on each side, there were three Shvatim under one division. But the way Rashi phrases it, called Degel, Basech Asifas Digloy, the implication sounds like if you're anywhere outside that area, even though you're in the general area where the Shvatim camp, but you're, let's say, there'd be a zone, there'd be like a no man's land between one Shevet and the next, then it sounds like that wouldn't be considered part of Machne Yisrael, and you wouldn't be able to eat Kodshim over there. So the Sfas Emes and the Rashash ask about that. It doesn't seem mashma from that, like that in other places, but the There is in fact an implication. There is maybe an implication from the Loshon of the Rambam that maybe indeed it is like that, that he would agree with that. But let's say, for example, you have, let's say on the area, you have on the one side, you have Yehuda, Yisachar, and Zvulun. So maybe if you happen to be in the area between Yehuda and Yisachar, you wouldn't be able to eat Kodesh and Kalam over there. On the other hand, the Ramban has a different different understanding of it. It brings from a relevant Braisa. So it comes out maybe that there's machlokas about that point. But sure, let's say if you're in the area where Yehuda camps, then you could eat. But could you eat, let's say, between Yehuda and Yisachar, or let's say in the corners where they kept their animals, would you be allowed to eat kodesh and kalam over there like shlomim? It turns out it may be a machlokas on that subject. Okay. Anyway, getting back to the Gemara, Rav Nechemia is saying that that's what it means when he says b'makom tahor implies a place where a certain degree of tumah is allowed, namely that zavim are allowed over there. But the Gemara asks why the aim of Torah mitumas zav, the tumah mitumas nes. Maybe it means a place that has to also be clean of zavim, but it can be the only tumah that's allowed there is tumas nes. The ezazeh, the machna levia, and you would say that would refer to machna levia. So how do you know that the shlomim can be eaten anywhere in machna Yisrael? Maybe only in machna levia. Omar Abaya, Omar Kro, because the pasuk says v'achaltem oisa b'makom kodesh. The pasuk says you should eat it in the makom kodesh. So the word oisa is a mute. It means it has to be eaten in a makom kodesh. The mincha that it says in the previous pasuk, the mincha has to be eaten in a makom kodesh, but not another thing. The bread that comes with a toida, for example, does not have to be eaten in a makom kodesh, because the pasuk doesn't say kodesh over there. It says. So in other words, you have like this. There's a miyuk that it says oisa, that the mincha has to be eaten in a makom kodesh, implying that something else does not. Therefore, apka l'machna levia. Therefore, that already tells us to go out to machna levia. Because already you're saying that the mincha has to be eaten in machna shchina, but the implication is that there's something else, such as the bread of a toga, that can be eaten someplace else, namely in machna levia. Then when the pasuk continues and says that you can eat the shlomim in a makom tahor after the machne Yisrael, then it means you're further saying, it can be further out, it can be in machne Yisrael. So that's how we learn, basically. In other words, there's a double limud over there. First, you're learning from Oysa that it's not in the Azara, which means you're in Machna Levia, and then you're learning from the Machna Tahar that it can be, it doesn't have to be in Machna Levia either, it can be in Machna Yisrael. That's Abaya's explanation. Rava gives a different explanation. Again, we'll start in the same way. Oysa b'makom kodesh v'la'acheres b'makom kodesh. Fine, by saying oysa is a miyot that only the mincha and other kodesh have to be eaten in makom kodesh, but not something else. After the gamri, from that we would learn that it's altogether completely out. You can go out as far as possible. Maybe even you could eat it outside anywhere. You could eat it anywhere and anywhere even. Maybe even outside Machne Yisrael. Hoder, Basar Rachmana. Then the pasuk says you have to eat it in a tahor place. Therefore, that means you're bringing it one zone in. In other words, according to that way of looking at it, if you only have the word, so according to Abaya's way of looking at it, Oysa tells you go one zone out. And then when you have the makom tahor, that means you can go two zones out. Rava is saying Oysa, the miut of Oysa, would allow us to go out altogether. You wouldn't even need to be in Machna Yisrael. But then when it says Makom Tahor, implies that you have to at least be one degree in a place that has a certain degree of Tara, namely the place where Mitzrayim can't be. So that way, at least we can learn from that you can't be. So therefore, at least from that, you learn that it can't be in the place where Mitzrayim can be, but it can be in the place where Zavim can be. So the Gemara asks the Ema Ayla L'Machna Levia. How do you know? Maybe it means then that you have to bring it all the way into Machna Levia. And the answer is L'Chodem Aylinim L'Tauti Loim Aylinim. It's more logical to say that we're only bringing it in one zone, but not two. Where would you have a basis all of a sudden to say that when it says Tosla B'Mokom Tahor, that you should have to go two zones back in, where before, with only the word Oysa, you could say you could do it anywhere, and now you're going to say it has to be in some kind of Mokom Tahor, but to say that that should have to be two zones in from what you otherwise thought, you don't really have a basis for saying that. So we're saying that you only need to go in one zone, which brings you into Machne Yisrael. Okay. So the Gemara asks, "Yehoki apoki nami lachodem apkinen mitaut yulei apkinen." Well, then by the same logic, what makes you say that the oisa should take you completely out to the extent that he should be able to go all the way out from Machne Shechina all the way out to completely elsewhere in the midbar or any or elsewhere even in the world, and you should say that you're able to go out that far, that you're able to go out through all those many zones? Say the same thing, lachodem apkinen mitaut yulei apkinen. You can only go out one zone, not two. Also, what do you mean you could say that could be even outside Machne Yisrael? The Pasuk says you can't eat korbanos anywhere in your gates, meaning anywhere in your cities outside Yerushalayim. So there's no way that the Pasuk could be implying that conceivably you could eat them outside Yerushalayim and say that then the other part of the Pasuk tells us that at least it has to be in Yerushalayim. So most of you write El Machvarta Kadabaya. So it's clear that we have to explain it like the way Abaya said, that it means that the oyster tells us to take out of one machna, and the Makam Toho tells us to take it out of another machna. And the result is that it's only outside two machnas, but it's still within Machna Yisrael. So that's how we learn that the El Nozer, that's how we learn that the ram of the Shlomim from the Miluim can be eaten anywhere in the Machna Yisrael, and in later generations, anywhere in Yerushalayim, and from that we learn to all the other Kodshim Kalim. Okay. Mishnah says, Shlomim, now we have the Shlomim, Kodshim Kalim, they are also Kodshim Kalim insofar as the Dinim of Me'ilah and so forth. Shritos and Bechomokam Ba'azara, they can be shechted again anywhere in the Azara, just like the Todah and the El Nazir. Here, our Gemara is now going to focus on how we know that they can be shechted anywhere in the Azara. The dum and tone shtei matanas shein abba, the blood again has to be applied shtei matanas shein abba to two opposite corners of the mizbeach. V'necholin b'cholayir, they can be eaten again anywhere in the city of Yerushalayim. L'chol adam by any person zorim b'chol machol, prepared any way they want or mixed with whatever food they want. L'shnei yamim v'layla echad. Here they have 2 days and one night. So in other words, if the korban was brought, let's say on a Sunday, then they have Sunday day, Sunday night, and Monday day until Shkia. Here, as we said before, the Chacham didn't find a need to make a gzera, to restrict it earlier, because Shkia, Tosfos points out, is very obviously noticeable, and therefore they'll know to stop before that. There is a point, actually, the Shittim Kubetzis brings further on that the main mitzvah is to eat it on the first day. The Pasuk, in fact, implies that. The Ramban, it points out, and the Ramban, and it's Pirush on the Pasuk, explains, the Pasuk uses the expression, V'yoyim ha'krivayas zivcha yo'ochol, it can be eaten on the day he brings his korban, umi machros, and on the next day, v'hanosim v'meni yo'ochol, what's left of it can still be eaten. But you see, it's called what's left of it, implying, in other words, that it's only like a b'dievet dikas. Thing, the Torah is giving you a break so you don't have to eat it all in one day. But when it comes to, according to that way of looking at it, you should be eating it on the first day. Not everybody agrees to that, and the Rambam, for example, does not. The Or Sameach understands the Rambam to be saying there's no lachatchila and b'diavad thing over there. It's perfectly fine, even lachatchila, to eat the shlomim on the second day. An interesting point is, so we said the toida, even though it's a toida as a type of shlomim, can be eaten only on the first day. There's two reasons that I've seen for why that is. Why taka does the toida restrict the amount of time that you can eat the toida compared to any other shlomim? One explanation, I believe it's from the Ramban, I don't remember, says, because a toida, generally speaking, a person brings it when he was saved by Hashem and from some kind of dangerous situation, like the cases where a person has to bring, the person of the cases nowadays where a person would bench goyimol. So what happens? He brings a toida. We want him to invite all his friends and all his relatives and everybody and tell over to them by the meal the nes that Hashem did for him. So therefore we want as many people to be there as possible. Therefore we give him only that day and that night to eat it, because otherwise he's not going to invite as many people, because he's going to figure I have it. I can leave it over for tomorrow as well. So that's one reason. Another reason I saw, a drosha type of reason, is because a toida is to thank Hashem, and every day we have to thank Hashem individually. Every day we have what to thank Hashem for. We can't say, so to speak, yesterday I thanked Hashem, that's good enough for today. No, we need a new thanks to Hashem today. So in token of that, the toida can be eaten only for one day. The shlomim doesn't have either of those features, so therefore it can be eaten for 2 days. Okay, the Mishnah continues. Hamura mehem, what's taken off from the shlomim, kayotze behem, has exactly the same din as the shlomim. Again, the chos of a shoyt that you give to the chos of a shoyt that you give to the kohen. Elosh hamura nechal kohenim, with the exception that that part can only be eaten by the kohenim, lunasheim by their wives, olivneim, and by their children, olavdehem, and their avodim knanim. Okay. So now we're going to focus on how we know that the shlomim can be shechted anywhere in the Azara. Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a braisa when the pasuk says, now there's three times when the Torah says about the shlomim where it's to be shechted. Because when the Torah describes, when a person brings a shlomim, it describes there's three types of animals they can bring. He can bring cattle, he can bring a sheep, or he can bring a goat. Any one of them is valid for a shlomim. And the Torah repeats the dinim of the shlomim three times in connection with each type of animal. And the first one it says, "Shchotoy pesach oyel moed," he should shecht it in front of the door of the oyel moed. The second one, "Veshachat oisel lefnei oyel moed," the second one he should shecht it in front of the oyel moed. And the third one, "Veshachat oisel lefnei oyel moed," the third one also says that he should shecht it in front of the oyel moed. So we learn from that, Lahakshu is Kolaruchus for Kodshim Kalim. It comes to teach us that by Kodshim Kalim you can shecht in any direction. The Gemara is going to explain soon how exactly we see that from these three psukim. And we can learn from that. The Gemara continues. The Braisa continues. Kavachoy melotzopin. We can argue that means three directions. Lifnei implies, means one direction. But then we have, what about the fourth direction? What about the tzofen itself? Kavachoymer l'tzofen. Well, you can make a kavachoymer that you should be able to shecht it in the north. You could argue, ma kodshe kodshim shalehukshur b'cholaruchas, ma dach kodshe kodshim, which are not kosher if they're shechted in most directions, only in the north of the Azara, hukshur b'tzofen, but they are kosher if they're shechted in the north, kodshim kalim shalehukshur b'cholaruchas, kodshim kalim are kosher in any direction, as we just said, ein adin shalehukshur b'tzofen, wouldn't it be a kavachomer that they're kosher if they're done in the north? So the Tanakhama of this Braisa says that's how we can learn that Kodshim Kalim can be shechted in any direction from the three psukim, from the three psukim plus the Kavachoymer. Now Rashi explains, why does the Tanakhama even need that Kavachoymer? The only reason he needs the Kavachoymer is because Rabbi Eliezer is going to go on to say in the Braisa that we actually need something explicit in the Pasuk. According to him, a Kavachoymer is not good enough, as we're going to explain in a minute, to say that the Tzofen is good. Therefore, the Tanakhama says, listen, as far as I'm concerned, you wouldn't really need anything else. But you, Rabbi Eliezer, want to say that the Tzofen, you need a separate Limud. I'm telling you the Limud for that is not from a different Pasuk, but rather from a Kavachoymer. Rabbi Eliezer says, Loi nemara kosev ela lahakshut suffered. No, the posik has only said, the posik is only coming to tell us that they're kosher in the suffering. So we're not learning it from a kavachomer. One of these psukim is actually telling us that the tzofen is kosher for kodshim kalim, as the Gemara is going to go on to explain how Rabbi Eliezer learns that. And the reason he says that is, you would have thought, on the contrary, you could use a kavachomer the other way around. Sheyocho v'alo dinhu. You could argue a kavachomer to the contrary. Ma kodshim kalim shehukshur b'chol aruchas, ma dach kodshim kalim, which are kosher in any other direction, loy hukshur m'koymen etzar kodshim kodshim, yet we could argue that maybe they're not kosher in the place of the kodshim kodshim. Maybe we would say loy hukshur m'koymen etzar kodshim kodshim means the other places in the Azara are not kosher for shecht and kodshim kodshim, because kodshim kodshim have to be in the north. So now, kodshe kodshim shalei hukshu el bat sofren. So now, if kodshe kodshim are kosher only in the north, ein adin shalei hukshu mekoymen etzel kodshim kalim. Maybe on the contrary, maybe that area is reserved only for kodshe kodshim and is not kosher for kodshim kalim. In other words, Rabbi Eliezer argues, the logic could be, kodshe kodshim and kodshim kalim both have restrictions where they can be. Kodshe kodshim only in the north, kodshim kalim only in the other three directions. So you can't say a kavachomer to say that the sofen is allowed. On the contrary, the kavachomer, you could use a kavachomer the other way around. So in other words, basically the choik nosan, one of the major meforshim on Amasechta, explains that the Tanakhama holds that sofen is more kodesh than the other sides. So your kavachomer would tell us that if it's good for kodesh kodshim, then it's certainly good for kodshim kalim. But Rabbi Eliezer says, well, adarab. If you're telling me that Sofen is more Kodesh, then maybe it means it's only reserved for Kodesh and Kodeshim. Maybe Kodesh and Kalim are not of enough Kedusha to be shechted over there. So you would think so. Tamav Loma, Oyot Moyed, therefore he says that's why the Pasuk says that it has to be, and it's in front of Oyot Moyed, which implies any place which is in front of Oyot Moyed in any direction. So according to him, you actually need one of the Pesukim to teach us that, because a Kavachoyma would argue to the contrary to say that it's possible on that direction. So the Gemara says, "B'maiko mitzvigi." What is the underlying argument? So it's like this: Tanakama Tanosa Kroy Ksivi. The Tanakama holds you have three psukim, as we just said, one by cattle, one by a sheep, and one by a goat. And each one of them, by the way, you can have both. When it comes to a shlomim, males and females are equally valid. So when we say, for example, cattle, we mean it could be a bull or it could be a cow, and the same thing by all the other ones. Anyway, Tanakama sort of plus a kroy ksivi. The Tanakama holds you have three psukim, one for each species of animal. So one is just legufay to tell us the actual din that you need to shech the korban in front of Pesach HaYomer, as the Gemara is going to explain further on that it means that the door has to actually be physically open. The second one tells us that it's kosher even if it's shechted on the sides. In other words, Pesach HaYomer could imply that maybe it's only if it's directly in front of the door. How would you know if you're a little bit north or a little bit south of the door? How would you know it's also kosher? For that, you need the second pasuk. And the third one tells us, so tzedodin would mean the entire width of the azara, from north to south. V'chad lifsot sidei tzedodin. The third one tells us, though, that the sides are posel. Rashi explains that would mean, the Gemara, we're going to learn more in the Gemara tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, that it means, let's say, for example, you have chambers, you have rooms in the Beis Mikdash. Now, depending on where they're located relative to the Azara, and depending where their doors are relative to the Azara, they're considered to a certain extent part of the Azara as far as some of the dinim. We're going to talk about tomorrow, that's the shem, about whether you're allowed to eat kodshim in there, etc. But here we're saying that as far as shechting, they're still possible for shechting. This particular one is built in a way that it has the full kedusha of the Azara. That's as far as eating, but the posik Pesach Oyo Moed implies that it cannot be inside one of those chambers. And the point is, you would think it just has to be someplace in front of the oil moed, but no, we're saying it has to actually be within view of the door, basically. So it can be in tzadim, where you're not directly in front of the door, but nevertheless, you still can't shecht korbanos inside those rooms. That's a simple Gemara, Shittim Kobetes. Brings that the Gemara actually is going to say tomorrow that anyway you can't shecht in them because they don't have the kedusha. So it gives a different answer in the name of Tosfos that tzidei tzedodin means the base hachalichos. The Gemara is going to discuss soon the wings, the extensions of the hechel, whether you're allowed to shecht near them or behind them or whatever. We're going to discuss that point soon. So that comes into play so the third pasuk is telling us that unless they have a door over there, as the Gemara is going to discuss soon, that you can't shecht over there. You can only shecht in front of the hechel, but not by the side of it or behind it. That way of looking at it. Okay, so the Tanakhama is saying, therefore, that you have three psukim that teach us that point. One, that it has to be, one, that the door has to be open. Two, that it can be anywhere in the width of the Azara. And three, that it can't be inside a chamber or behind the hechel or whatever. And then that Tanakhama says, but Sofim, it's Rechra, as far as that it can be shechted in the north, that Kodshim Kavim can be shechted in the north, you don't need a posuk for that. As he said on Amud Aleph, you have a Kavachoymer for that. That's the Tanakhama. Rabbi Yezer learns as follows. Chad Legufay, the first posuk tells us Legufay, that there has to be a door there and it has to be open. Diniboy Pesach HaYomer, that has to be in front of the Pesach HaYomer. V'chad l'hachshut Sofen, the second one tells us that the Sofen is kosher, not to use the Kavach HaYomer that Rabbi Eliezer had mentioned before on Amud Aleph. V'chad l'hachshut Tzedodin, and the third one tells us that the whole width of the Azara is kosher, even if it's not directly in front of the door. And he says, V'tzidei Tzedodin, la'itzirich pra, he says, on the contrary, to say that the Tzidei Tzedodin, that inside the Lashachas, or behind the Heichel, or whatever, should be posel, you don't need a posel for that, it comes from the very same posel. It says, L'fnei Oyel Moed, implies that it has to be in front of the Oyel Moed, and not inside a room, and not in the back, or whatever. So automatically, we see from that, not Tzidei Tzedodin, and therefore, Rabbi Eliezer says, you don't need a posel for that, and instead he uses one of the psukim to tell us that it's kosher in suffering. Okay. So now, fine, so that explains what we need the three psukim for, according to either opinion. But now, the Gemara says, within the three psukim themselves, you have a difference. Two of them it says, Lefnei Oyomoyed, and one of them it says, Pesach Oyomoyed. What's the difference? Maish Nehocha Dechtiv Pesach Oyomoyed. Why is it by the cattle Now, cattle shlomim, it says by the door of the oil moed, or Pesach merely means the entrance, actually. So we have in this week's parasha, we have with Lloyd's confrontation with the people of Sdoim, Rashi makes a point over there that the words Delas and Pesach are not the same thing. Delas means the door. So for example, it says the people of Sdoim were about to break down the door, and the Malachim had to pull Lloyd inside and close the door. Whereas Pesach means the actual opening within which the door opens and closes. So for example, it says over there that Lloyd went out to them, HaPescha, he went out to the doorway, Vadela Sagaracher, and he closed the door behind him to talk to them. And afterwards, when they went blind, it says that they were that they're wearing themselves out trying to find the entrance. So like they wouldn't even have a hope of finding the door, but at least they want to find the entrance. So it was the same way over here. When it says Pesach Oyo Moed, it means the entrance of the Oyo Moed. So why does it say that? Instead of by the other two, it just says Lifnei Oyo Moed. So the answer is Kamashalon Kedid Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, because the Pasuk wants to thereby tell us the din that Rabbi Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, which is the Amar of Yehuda Amar Shmuel Shlomim Sheshachta and Kodim Shei Pasul Dalsas Heichal. If you shecht a korban shlomim in the morning before the doors of the heichal were open, or for that matter, Tosfos points out it can also mean if the doors happen to be closed for some reason in the middle of the day, psulin, then those korbanos would be posel. The shlomim has to be davka shechted when the doors are open. Rashi later on in the next paragraph explains that that's specifically by the shlomim. On the other hand, And actually, in Masechta Nozir, where it also mentions that point, the Mefarish over there printed in Nozir under Rashi's name, although it seems to not be from Rashi, explains the logical reason behind it, because Shlomim, more than any other korban, is a gift for Hashem. When you bring a gift, you have to bring it in front of the one you're bringing it to. So like, so to speak, the door has to be open, so that like it's literally in the presence of Hashem. On the other hand, Tosfos over there explained that it's not only by shlomim, it actually applies to all korbanos. Anyway, but a shlomim at least, maybe other korbanos, if they're shechted when the door is closed, whether they didn't open in the morning yet, or whether they closed in the middle of the day, still in the korban would be possible. Shenemo shchote pesach oyo moed, because the pasuk says you should shecht it by the entrance of the oyo moed. So that means that the shlomim and maybe other korbanos as well have to be bizman shul posuach, only when it's open. Veloy bizman shu nol, not when it's locked. So if it's locked, then, and we'll see in a second what happens if it just closed, then the korban is posel. And the Gemara says, Itmar Nami, they said also, Amama Ukva Bachoma, Amar Rabbi Yosi Bechanina, Shlomim Sheshachtim Kremishi Possible, Dals is a Heichel Psulim. If you shach the Shlomim before the doors of the Heichel are open, then they're Possible. Shenema, because the Possible says, Shchotit Pesach Ayomoy, bizman shu Pesach Heichel Possuach, Veloy bizman shu nol. So yeah. And the Gemara says it's not only, so we have so far two different sets of Amiroyim who say it. We have Rabbi Yehuda in the name of Shmuel. We have Ma'ukva Bachoma in the name of Rabbi Yosi Bechanina. And now we have further, B'ma'arova Masni Hachi. So far we're talking about when the doors were closed. B'ma'arova in Eretz Yisrael, Masni Hachi, they learned it as follows. Amar Rabbi Yaakov Ba'acha, Amar Rabbi Ashi, Shlomim Sheshachtim, Kodesh Yipasol, Das Leichab Solim. But not only that, B'mishkan, what about in the Mishkan? They didn't have doors in the Mishkan, they only had a curtain. So there, the doors being open is not relevant, but Kodesh Shiyamidu HaLevi'im as a Mishkan, if they put it up, if they shechted a Shlomim before the Levi'im set up the Mishkan, or La'acha Shiyifriku Levi'im as a Mishkan, or after the Levi'im took apart the Mishkan, Psulim, then those Shlomim would also be possible. Because again, then it's not Pesach Oyo Moed. Pesach Oyo Moed implies that the entrance to the Oyo Moed has to be an entrance to the Oyo Moed over there, and now there isn't. So then it would be possible because it's not Pesach Oyo Moed. Moshe Feinstein in his Chidushim has a discussion of the point that if there's no Mishkan there at all, then it's not Oyo Moed. So what do you mean? It's not Pesach Oyo Moed. It's Possel anyway, because Yotzik is outside. It's outside the Mishkan. There's a discussion that maybe, in fact, is it still called Oyel Moed when everything is taken apart? Maybe it's not called Oyel Moed when everything is taken apart. And then what we mean over here is even if the Chotzer is still intact, they only took down the main building of the Mishkan, then already it's enough for it to be considered. Then it would still be kosher because it's inside the Chotzer, but it would be possible on different grounds because it's Pesach Oyel, but not Pesach Oyel Moed. Okay. So the Gemara says, Pshita. Now, we know obviously the following thing, Mugaf, if the doors are closed, even though they're not locked, can null dummy for that purpose. They're considered like they're locked, and therefore the shlomim would be possible. Zvila in my, what about if there's a curtain in front of the door? So during the daytime, they would keep the doors open, but usually there would be a curtain hanging over the door. The Gemara mentions elsewhere, like this, we had famously, there was a curtain in front of the Kodesh HaKadosh, but in addition, there were a number of other curtains in various places, and the Mishmetash covering the doorways. So now, if you have that curtain covering the doorway, is the door considered closed or not? So Rav Zeira says, no, the curtain would be considered like an open doorway, because it's not there to keep the place closed, it's done there for tznius, so that people don't look into the heichel. It's not respectful that people would be staring into the heichel, and therefore it's considered like the door is open, because it's only meant for tznius. And Tosfos explains that's the point. If it was just meant. After all, after they shech the shlomim, they could have closed the doors, but instead they keep the doors open all day, and they have this curtain over there for tznius purposes. There is an explanation that maybe, the Minchas Chinuch explains that maybe the Rambam would hold, based on a lashon from the Rambam, maybe he would hold that hatzchila, you should actually open up the curtain as well while you're shechting the shlomim, and only b'dievet if you didn't, then the shlomim is kosher. Okay. The Gemara asks, Goyv Hamai. Now, what about if there's something tall in front of the entrance? What about, so far we've talked about if the doors are opened or closed, but what if you have something at least 10 tefachim tall in front of the doorway? Would that be a problem? And then you can, and so now, let's say, so you have something in between where now you can't see the door of the heichel from where you're standing. Now, Tosfos brings up the point. Wait a minute. If that was, of course, that's not a problem. If it was, then the mizbeach would then if you shecht it past the mizbeach, if you had the mizbeach between you and the door of the heichel, then it would be a problem. And we never find that should be considered a problem. And even though maybe you could see part of the entrance above the mizbeach, that wouldn't necessarily help. So Tosfos wonders then what is the Gemara even asking? Of course, if we see that they leave it as a question. You know, it seems that the mizbeach is not a problem, so why should anything else be a problem? Shittim Kubetis brings an answer from Rabbeinu Peretz. Listen, the mizbeach is there; you need it there for the korbanos. So of course, it's not going to be a hefsek. The question is anything else. And then there's further discussion. Maybe the Gemara is asking if you have something. Maybe the Gemara is not asking if you have something elsewhere in the Azara. What if you have something within the door itself? You have, let's say, somebody put something. The Ponim Meiris explained that maybe, let's say, you put something in the door. It's in the doorway itself. So we said if the doors themselves are closed, it's possible. But what if you took something? You took a piece of furniture, or you took something and put it partially blocking the door. Would that be a problem? So the Gemara says, Toshma, we'll bring a proof to Tanya. We learn in a Braisa. Now it's like this. We have to consider the structure and the shape of the Heichel. The Heichel was, the Heichel included the Kodesh HaKadoshim and the Kodesh and the Ulam. The whole building was 100 amos long. The front of it was 100 amos wide, and the height of it was 100 amos tall. But when we say the front of it was 100 amos wide, the back of it was not. The back of it was only 70 amos wide. Why? Because in the front of it, you had the ulam, the entranceway to the heichel, and then you had, on the two sides of it, there were two areas called beis hachalifos, which means the area of the knives. They would place the kohenim, would put their knives there when they got dull, and when they became posel, they would store them away there, and they'd stay there, And the Beis HaChalifah is the same way as a shchita knife. It's called a chalaf, so this area was called the Beis HaChalifah. Rashi learns that the Beis HaChalifah went along the entire northern and southern sides of the Heichel. So according to him, in other words, the Rambam actually seems to understand similarly. The Rambam gives a diagram similarly, where according to him, the Heichel was built kind of like a trapezoid. So it was wider in front, and it narrowed gradually towards the back. In the back, it was 70 amas. So according to that, according to the Rambam, and apparently according to Rashi, the Beis HaChalifos extended the full length of either side of the Heichel. According to Tosfos, no, you had the Heichel, according to them, was shaped like a T, as you usually see it, in diagrams. Therefore, you had 15 amas sticking out to the north and 15 to the south, and that's what's called the Beis HaChalifos. In any case, so now, the Braisa says, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Shnei Pishpishin, Hoyu Rebeis HaChalifos. There were two Pishpishin. A Pishpash is a small gate. You have the actual big gates of the Beis HaMikdash that were 20 amas tall and 10 amas wide. Here, these were smaller gates. just large enough for a person to go in and out, but not necessarily the full size. So the Hoyu Beis HaChalifos were located in the Beis HaChalifos, in these northern and southern extensions of the Ulam. Again, according to Rashi, they went the entire width, the entire length of the Heichal from east to west, and according to Tosfos, it was just on the eastern side. Anyway, there were two of these pishpashin, two of these small doors built into it, the Goivan Shmona. They were eight amas tall. That way the whole Azara would be kosher for Shechtin Kodshim Kalin. Because this way, the entire Azara is kosher to eat kodshe kodshim, and it's also to shecht kodshim kalim. We just said that kodshim kalim have to be shechted Pesach Oyom Moed. So now, therefore, they have to be at least some place in front of the door. Now, the main door to the Heichal was through the Ulam, was on the eastern side of it. So what if you wanted to go, let's say in the Azara, you wanted to go north or south of the Heichal and shecht kodshim kalim over there? How could you do that? It would be possible. It's not in front of the door. Therefore, Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Huda says, they have these little doorways built into the Beis HaChalifos in order that now, when you're someplace, when you're next to or behind the Heichal, when you're next to the Heichal, then you'll be in view of that little door on the one side or the other, and therefore you'll be able to shecht kodshim kalim over there, and you'll be able to eat kodshim over there. The Gemara is actually the continuation of the discussion further on. I'm Daphne involved is going to talk about it really is not necessary for the kodshim, so we'll get to that point later. But Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Hodad, at any rate, is saying that they have these little doorways over there. Now, when we say the Goyva Shmoina, the Gemara assumes at this point that it means that there was a height, there was something 8 amas tall in front of each of these doorways. Again, for privacy. We would assume, first of all, for privacy, and second of all, since the Mishnah says, as the Gemara is going to quote soon, that all the doorways in the Beis HaMikdash were 10 by 20, and he was saying 8, then the Gemara assumes it doesn't mean the door was only 8 amas tall, because that would break that rule. Rather, it sounds like it means there was something 8 amas tall in front of them. So that's the Gemara says, my lab, the Ikka Kamayo, Goy Rashmoina. Doesn't that mean, on the face of it, that it means that there were two things of 8 amas tall in front of each of these doorways, and nevertheless, it's still considered open? So the Gemara says, no, that's not what it means. Degavu Ninu, or Degavu Inhu Shmoina, it means that they themselves were 8 amas tall. So it's fine. So we don't know then what would be the din if you had something in front of the door, because here the Braisa doesn't mean that the doorways, that there was something in front of the doorways 8 amas tall. It means the doorways themselves were 8 amas tall. So the Gemara says, nicely, but I have a contradiction. What do you mean they were only 8 amas tall? A Mishnah says in Midas, Kol Asha'orim Shahyusham, all the gates that were in the Beis HaMikdash, Goyvan Esrim Amma, Verochvan Esra Amma. They were 20 amas tall and 10 amas wide. So where's 8 amas? And then what's this pishpashin shiny? When we talk about a pishpash, a small gate, they're not really meant for going in and out so much. They're just meant for this purpose. So you should have a gate over there, so it's kosher, so it's Pesach HaMoed, so therefore they don't have to be full 10 amas tall, they can be 8 amas. Okay. The Gemara asks, fine, that takes care of the area by the Beis HaChalifos. But what about Ba'ikot Tzadin? What about though you have sides? At this point, the Gemara is assuming that these little doorways were behind the Beis HaChalifos. So they would be so they would face towards the west. So the Gemara asks, Ba'ikot Tzadin? What about the sides on the north and the south? Be next to the Heichal, next to the Beis HaChalifos. How are those going to be made kosher by these doorways? And the answer is the Pasachol v'Keren Zavis. The answer is the doorways were in the corner. They were in the corner where, for example, the western wall of the Beis HaChalifos meets the northern wall or meets the southern wall. So it was on an angle over there. So that way, whether you're north or south over there, or whether you're west of it, then you'll be in front of the doorway. Okay, the Gemara says, Achura Beis HaKapodas Mai. What about behind the Beis HaKapodas? There was an 11 Amma space behind the Kodesh HaKadoshim, between that and the western wall of the Azara. Mai, what about that? How are the Pishpishin going to help with that? that there you're not in view of the Pishpashin at all, because those are by the Beis HaChalifos. Now, here's where Tosfos asks, actually, if according to Rashi, the Beis HaChalifos extends all the way to the western wall, then what's the problem? So therefore, that's why Tosfos prefers to explain that we're talking about that the Beis HaChalifos only were extensions north and south of the Ulam, and they didn't extend all the way to the west. So the Pishpashin you have in them is not going to help that area behind the Hegel. So what would you do there? And the answer is Toshma, the Amar Romi Bar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rav, Lul Kotan, Hoya Achore Beis HaKapodes. There was a small window open behind the Beis HaKapodes. Rashi explains that it means like this. You had Beis HaKapodes, you had the Kodesh Kodoshim itself, then you had within the building itself, there were toyim. There were little chambers, little side chambers surrounding the Kodesh, surrounding the whole Heichel and Kodesh HaKadoshim. So through that little chamber behind the Kodesh HaKadoshim, there was a window that went through there and into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and Achore Beis HaKapodes, behind the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and went out to the Azara, Gavoya Shmona Amos. Again, this window was 8 Amos tall, like the doorway that we said before. Although Shitim Chobetz takes that out, because here there wouldn't necessarily be a need for 8 Amos. For the same reason that way even that part of the Azara is kosher to eat kosher kodshim, and is kosher to shecht kodshim kalim, because it's also considered to be in front of the doorway. Tosfos actually asks, wait a second, if you can't see, you can't see the Pesach Olam Moed from there, Tosfos points out, in fact, that you can't see the Heichel from there, because you can see into the Kodesh HaKadoshim from there, let's say, but then between the Kodesh HaKadoshim and the Heichel, you have Poroichosin, and there's no entrance over there. So the answer is, Tosfos says that the lul itself, this doorway itself, is actually, this window itself, is considered a doorway, and as long as you can see the Kodesh HaKadoshim in it, that's through it, then it's fine. So that would mean, in other words, that you actually had a window from which you could see from the outside into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So it would be a way. It would be a way of coming in. Tosfos, though, actually still wonders that the fact is that the ones by the Beis HaChalifos, at least you could conceivably go in and out over here. But here we're talking about they're above ground. They're above ground. So how could you wouldn't be able to get in and out of them anyway. So Tosfos wonders how are those even considered? How is a window like that even considered a doorway?
It's a window that was above the parochas.
It wouldn't necessarily be above the parochas, but the point is it would be above ground level, and there wouldn't necessarily be stairs or anything there. So you could conceivably, if you climbed up on a ladder or something, you could see it, but it's not something you could easily get in and out from, and that's not considered coming in and out. Coming in and out means you come walking on the floor or walking on stairs or something. So how is that even considered a doorway?
Not be considered a doorway, obviously.
That's
not.
That's the question, yeah. That Tosfos asks that question. And if you're going to say, Tosfos goes on to say that, Tosfos says again that the fact that you can see into the Kodesh HaKadoshim wouldn't necessarily help. On the face of it, you have to be able to see into the Kodesh. So again, you have Poroichosin over there separating from the Kodesh. So it's not so much a matter that you can't get in there easily, but how would you see from there into the Heichel? So the Keren Oda answer is that again, like we said before, the curtains are not considered a hefsek because they're only there for tzniyos. So you could say the same answer over here. You know, physically you can't see into the Kodesh, it's still good enough because it's only curtains that are blocking you, and curtains are not a problem.
In any case, it's not for us to see inside. It's lifnei Hashem, meaning Hashem has to see us.
Right, that's the point. The point is, in other words, that it's actually open over there. So in other words, we're understanding, in other words, that lul does not necessarily. So maybe, in other words, the understanding is that usually a lul means a window. That usually it means a window, but maybe it means over here it was close enough to the ground that you could fairly easily get in and out through it.
Even if the doors are closed, completely closed, Hashem can still see through doors, windows, and curtains,
course,
and
true,
anything.
But nevertheless, we're saying the doors have to be open for us to recognize that we are in the presence of Hashem and we are bringing Hashem a carbon. So the Gemara finishes
that
with this.
That means that Lifnei Hashem, that we have to see him, or he has to see us.
Yeah, that's the idea. In other words, it has to be in front of Hashem. We have to be cognizant of the fact that we're before Hashem, yeah. Okay. So the Gemara says, "V'hainu d'chtiv." We find a pasuk in Divrei Yomim when it talks about the people, when it talks about the mishmaris of Levim and Kohenim who were guarding around the Beis Hamikdash. There's an expression over there, "Shnayim l'parbar." There were two who were guarding the parbar. So the parbar, the Gemara's understanding, means this little window or this little doorway that's behind the Kodesh HaKadoshim. So the Gemara says, where do you see my parbor? Why is it now? The Gemara, by the way, prints it over here, parbor, as two words. In the pasuk, it's actually written as one word, la parbor. And before Shimon, the pasuk explained the simple meaning of parbor means the areas of where, means the surrounding areas. But here, the Gemara is explaining that it means the area behind the Kodesh HaKadoshim. What does that mean? Omer Rav Bar Shila, commander Omer Klape Bar. Like when the word bar means outside. So these guards, the guard that would stand over there by that area, would be behind the wall of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, Achorei Beis HaKapodes. And in fact, in Masechta Midos, when it lists all the places where Levim and the Kohenim were guarding, it mentions one place was Achorei Beis HaKapodes in the 11 Amos between the back wall of the Kodesh HaKadoshim and the wall of the Azara. And now, based on this Gemara, we understand why, because there was an entrance over there. The purpose of that entrance was not so much to go in and out, as Tosfos points out, but nevertheless, there was an entrance over there, and therefore, the purpose of it was to make that part of the Azara kosher for shechting kodshim kalim and for eating kodshim. Nevertheless, because in fact there was a doorway over there, is why they had a guard over there. Because as the Rambam points out, based on the Sifri, in general, the whole point of guarding the Beis Hamikdash is not so much because like you're afraid people are going to break in or something. It's an honor, like you have by a king's palace. You have guards, like the Habdo by Buckingham Palace. They always have the guards there. So therefore, the same way the Beis Hamikdash has to have guards to every place where there's an entrance, you have to have guards. And since there's an entrance over here, behind the Kodesh HaKadoshim, so they set up guards over there as well. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow. Be'ez Hashem, the Gemara is going to continue about this point of what exactly is needed for an area of the Azara to be kosher for shechting kodshim, for kodshim talim, and for eating kodshim. So then we're going to take up that point and discuss it in detail in the Gemara tomorrow. Be'ez Hashem.
Yishkayach.
What time tomorrow?